All right, so with the great view that I will just take the first experimental, the talk on this morning, we'll go back to a little bit simpler system for all. And when I just looked through all these the presentations in the conference, probably the material that I'm going to discuss today is probably the simplest system that only one element, carbon, light elements, no spin orbit couplings, two dimensions, simple band structures. But nevertheless, the whole topic that I want to kind of deliver is a little bit of the sense that yet the electron-electron interaction is fairly important, and some part tied with this the strongly correlated systems and strange metals and those kind of things can be even just kind of make the tie with the graphene. So that's the general topic. I just kind of put the title as the unusual quasi-particle correlations in graphene. And as Subir said, that quasi-particle is introduced in a sense to simplify these interactions into the turn into the object into weakly interacting particle, such that we can just deal with that. And in typical metals with a strong electron-electron interactions presence with many electrons, so Landau-Fermi-Leckett theory tells us that in principle we can just renormalize that out, interactions out, and turn into this weakly interacting quasi particles. We can describe most of these typical metallic systems with reasonably good precisions. I think that's one of the real victory of this the modern condensed matter physics, and describe a large class of the relatively simple metals using this kind of framework. And of course, this start kind of break down once that you get the kind of really strong interaction regimes or getting to the low dimensional regimes, such as that the Luttinger liquid in one dimension is a good example that, that this approach completely break down. And a lot of the topics that has been discussed in this conference also fall into the questions that whether Landau Fermi liquid actually hold in those kind of metallic system. There's the interesting transport tool, in fact, one can use to test it out, this Landau-Fermi-Leckett theorem, the pictures. It is basically comparing the thermal transport and electrical transport, known as the Wiedemann-Franz law for some 150 years or so. The idea is basically when you just send this heat or the charge through this metallic system, if this the heat or heat and charges are carried by the quasi-particle, both the heat current and charge current relaxations on the driving force is intimately related. Say momentum relaxation, energy relaxation can be intimately related with throughout this quasi particle. So it's not surprising there should be some relations between those kind of the energy current versus heat current relation with its driving force. So one can go through these various different the way to prove that. But in the end, that in a nutshell, that thermal conductivity divided by electrical conductivity divided by temperature will be rather universal numbers known as a Jumbo-Felt value in the Fermi-Leckett pictures, which actually does not depend on any material detail. I think that's a kind of interesting part. Over the many, many years, it has been tested out for the many relatively simple metals. So here the chart that you can just find out that 2.5 is basically 2.5 times this unit is basically what Jumbo-Felt value. Many of this metal, simple metals and alloys fall into something like the 20% and 30% of the accuracy falling these numbers with the various different temperature. And not only just a simple metal, if you go to heavily doped semiconductor, degenerate doped semiconductor, they may actually fall into the kind of similar level. So we know it has been tested out quite rather strongly. However, now once you just break down, break this at the quasi-particle pictures especially, and if the system turns into a strange metal, it has been seen experimentally this relation start to break down, and also some of the system theoretically argued. Luttinger liquid is a good example. There are some experimental evidence that indeed one chain like the system, when you just carefully measure the thermal conductivity in the system, electronic contribution of thermal conductivity in the system, it seems like the thermal conductivity is larger than what is expected by the Wiedemann-Franz, and more or less follow through this Kane Fisher type of the description of the Latin, the thermal transport in the Latin jawlikit. Quite recent report that the measuring thermal conductivity, electrical thermal conductivity across the vanadium oxide right after the metal insulator transition supposedly is also strongly correlated, that this experimental result actually shows that indeed Wiedemann-Franz law cannot explain the change of the electronic part of the thermal conductivities and so on. So there has been some evidences maybe that using this thermal transport combined with electron transport, one can just interrogate this the breakdown of the quartz particle pictures in some of the strange metal. Now, I'm going to just kind of talk about only the graphene today. Part of the reason is that although this is a simple system, there is some hint that interaction plays an important role, and especially this residual correlation or correlation of the quartz particle can be considered strong. So our time allows, we'll go through three examples. Probably I'm going to talk about mostly on this dark fluid in that make the connection with just introduction just made. But if the time allows, I will just kind of discuss some of the other interesting the quartz particle correlation we can make in the graphene using the superconductors or maybe using under the magnetic field. You can make those magnetic excitons across the Landau level and make the condensations to make the strongly correlated interesting systems. Okay, so let's start with the first topic about the Dirac fluid. So idea is the coming down, although graphene gives rather simple band structures, so the band structure itself is interesting in a sense that this is kind of first kind of discovered Dirac materials, I would say, Dirac spectrums. And there's chirality, one can just kind of play around, associate with this, this spectrum. One interesting part of this linear spectrum is if in two dimension, if you just look at the density of state actually vanishes, linearly vanishes and becomes zero at the Dirac point. So if you just think about the electron-electron screen, which actually related with the density of state at the Fermi level, you can immediately see that electron-electron screening becomes weaker or actually vanishes at the right at that point. So there is the possibility that you can correlate the system using this strong Coulomb interactions. Indeed, if you just look at the parameter that governing those the screening in such a case, it is effective fine structure constant, where actually which describe this the electromagnetic field coupling with the charge. In graphene, due to this linear dispersion relation, where that Fermi velocity is three times smaller than speed of the light, if you compute the effective fine structure constant alpha here, it is very close to one, depends on the dielectric environments, but it's basically order of one quantity rather than just real fine structure constant, which actually start can make us believe that maybe the things can be correlated near the Dirac point. Indeed, for past 10 years, Subir is one of them, the first pointing out that this possibility, that if you just look at the phase diagrams, potential phase diagrams of this Dirac fluid, the electron liquid system in the graphene, at least in the finite temperature, that there's a possibility that you can make the strong correlation between these charges, especially along this near the Dirac point in the non-degenerate limits. Basically, you can excite the thermally populated electron hole across the spectrum. Weak screening can possibly just correlate them very strongly and can result into that various exciting result potentially, right? So there has been some discussions. For example, you can compute the electron-electron scattering times and then scales in different way, especially in the reasonably high temperature when electron-electron scattering length becomes the dominant the scattering length scale, the time scale, then basically you can have the really strongly correlated hydrodynamic system set into the system. And their theoretical expectation is, well, there might be the quasi particle picture is another good one that you want to deal with, and using these hydrodynamic pictures, you can compute that all this transport coefficient in this Dirac fluid region, and that there has been predictions that it can be quite substantially different from what you expect from Fermi liquid. Experimentally, actually exploring those kind of region has been just deterred for a while because the most of the time that when you prepare the graphene sample, that samples are reasonably disordered. And then reaching this temperature scale that you get the thermally populated electron hole has been somewhat difficult because of the prevailing disorder, especially unscreened disorder near the Dirac point. the energy scale is used to be, say, several hundred Kelvin. Over the time, that experiment list, including my groups, just get this sense that how reduced the disorder in the sample. And a few years ago, that we start to get a sample that this thermal effect near the Dirac point becomes quite substantial. So here's a good example. This is a graphene that encapsulated between the boron nitride and typical technique now experimentalists use to reduce the disorder in the system, especially near the Dirac point. And then you clearly see that in the transport, this is a kind of changing the gate voltage, which tune the carrier density. If you measure resistance, the resistance picked up near the Dirac point, simply reduce the density of state, you increase the resistance. And as you increase the temperature from low to the high temperature, this the resistance peak in terms of the gate voltage broaden out, and we start to see that, so that clear thermal effect sets in here, right? So this is kind of cool, at least compared with the disorder sample where nothing changes with the temperature, this is cool. And also if you just analyze how much actually is broadened out in this log scale plot, you can get the sense that what is a disorder, still residual disorder in the sample. It turns out this is the residual disorder order is a range of something like the 50 Kelvin or so. So above the 50 Kelvin, now we start to see that sitting in the Dirac point, that you start to see the thermally populated electron holes into the system. Now, as you see in this electrical transport, I can pick up this the thermal effect at the Dirac point, which actually I was looking for, but data is rather boring. Everything's thermally broadened out. I don't see anything particular here. And part of the reason is it's not just electrical transport, which is kind of weird, but only when you compare with the thermal transport, you start to see that pictures of the Dirac fluid in the system. So what should we do? We should measure the thermal transport, especially electronic contribution of thermal transport. So this is also a little hard task for the experimentalists, because when you measure typically thermal transport, you measure the everything's, especially in finite temperature, phonon contribution is often the dominant contribution. The system like the graphene, where is it kind of close to semi-metal. So you have to somehow only access electronic system to measure the thermal conductivity. So that can be done by shrink the size of device, first of all, such that the length scale of the device is smaller than electron phonon scattering length scale. And then we can joule heat the sample by sending the column. So we heat up the electronic system, but then electron becomes hotter than the lattice, but there's no length scale that yet the electron can give the heat to the phonon. So that's the case that I can just contain all the heat in the electronic system. And the second thing is that I have to measure the temperature electrons separately. And this can be done by just kind of monitoring the noise of the electronic system. So what we can do is we can construct the electron thermometry, the noise thermometry, and Johnson noise thermometry to measure the resistance change with joule heating. And also at the same time that we measure noise to get the temperature. And from there that we extract information about the thermal conductivity in the system. So we have to build out this noise thermometry to measure the noise at the different temperature and different bias. Comparing with the joule heating, we can eventually get this the information of thermal conductivity as well as electrical conductivity, right? So what you can do is we can now then compare these two quantities. Here, this chart that as a density, as a temperature, we can compare that how that measured thermal conductivity compared with electrical conductivity that when I try to convert in terms of Wiedemann-Franz law. So Wiedemann-Franz law works, then I know that they're proportional, and I know that what is the exactly proportional coefficient, which is T times this L naught, the Zumwalt value I just introduced before, right? Already in this curve that you start to see that, it's some way it works, some way it's a diverse, and there's a kind of big diverse, especially near the Dirac point and so on. The better way that I can present that this one is, I just can summarize everything in this one chart. So this I define the L is a ratio between the measured thermal conductivity divided by the measured electrical conductivity divided by the temperature where I measure. So this L, if the Wiedemann-Franz law works, then should it be L naught, the Zumwalt value, right? So I'm just dividing L with L naught and just plot it out at the temperature and the density I measured this two quantities, the conductivities, both conductivities, right? But then you start to see that there is most of the places blue, which is close to one, so Wiedemann-Franz law works most of the place, except that this red block, where that becomes red means that this value is becomes quite high, this ratio. Now, this high ratio means that I have the strong thermal conductions rather than more than expected from Wiedemann-Franz law, and deviation is about factor of 20. So it's a strong deviation, right? Cannot be explained by the simple any simple arguments that you can just based on Wiedemann-Franz law or the Fermi Leckie pictures. So we see that there is kind of strong deviation violations. And the next question is why actually it's violating? And this is precisely what the theory, Subbius' theory actually expected when you consider these Dirac fluidities and hydrodynamic motions of the, this Dirac fluid. First of all, this you notice that this is nicely confined near this zero density. So if you just think about those kind of conical shapes that where the, you have the where Dirac fluid sits in this phase diagram, that's where that you expect the non-degeneracy. So if I just say that what is a chemical potential equal to temperature, so in this two line, in between this the wedge shape of the line, this is where that you expect the non-degeneracy, and that's where the Dirac, point, Dirac fluid can populate it, the violating Wiedemann-Franz law. Now, then there is a low temperature the limits, and that can be explained. The previous measurement I showed you that at the low temperature below 50 Kelvin-ish, the disorder starts kind of prevailing. And picture is basically now instead of your Dirac fluid, you have the puddles of this electrons hole separated, populated in space inhomogeneously. That's basically this one of the limit. High temperature limit comes from that whole picture, the hydrodynamic description we actually have used so far. Does not contain the inelastic scattering, especially coming from electron and optical phonon scattering. And at some finite temperature and above the, some high temperature, that starts to set in, that will spoil these hydrodynamic descriptions, only the electrons, right? So we know that more or less high temperature, the picture that we just break, the setup is breakdown. So as you see here, that the space that is nicely the kind of contained with all of the description we have, more or less we start to see that this is evidence, this experimental observation of the breakdown of the Wiedemann-Franz law can support this the existence of Dirac fluid that which actually is expected. Right. One can do a little bit more quantitative the analysis, for example, that introducing the simple disorder, just kind of one parameter of the mean pre-path, the theory actually expects that how this L over L naught actually scales with this the density. And over the three different samples of the different disorder contents on the various temperature, we can actually scale everything with the simple formula. And with these two feeding parameters, one is elastic mean prepath and fluid enthalpy density, and just give us a reasonable description of what is expected from the Dirac fluid. One can do actually furthermore of this analysis. For example, that if you just treat the disorder even more realistically, this is what was done the Lucas when he was a Subbius student, and then one can get this description of the electrical conductivity and thermal conductivity separately within this the description, and also you can do or even more elaborate things once you consider all this that dynamic constraint of the Dirac fluid and so on. But whole point here that I want to make sense is now that we have the experimental tool and experimental system. It's a rather simple system, but at least when things got strongly correlated or strongly intact, due to the quasi-criticality, we start to see that by comparing the electrical conductivity and thermal conductivity, indeed, kind of substantial deviation from that, the Fermi-Leckie pictures. Of course, we can just, as an experimentalist, just carry on this tool that we just developed, measuring the electronic contribution of thermal conductivity in the system even further, for example, applying the magnetic field and measure the, how this thermal, measure thermal conductivity modulated by the magnetic field. For example, you can just try to see that, how the magneto-hydrodynamic wave sets in, or simple thing is just going to the high density where, again, electron Fermi-Leckie pictures comes in and just to show that Wiedemann-Franz law not only works under no magnetic field, under the magnetic field, the magnetotensor of the thermal magnetotensor and the electrical tensor actually is related with the term by term or the component by component. Of course, once you just kind of bring it to the, this really quantum limit, when quantum law sets in, again, this thermal conductivity measurement is a really important tool that we can guide that. This is a preliminary result. I don't want to make any the quantitative statement at this point, but I'm just showing you that experimental tools that we just developed can be useful for the kind of further limits. So the this is one of the descriptions that I want to make about this comparing the electrical transport and thermal transport, and just look at this the interesting the correlation near the dark point. There's another way, though, we can still make the correlations between the carriers in the graphene. Graphene is a relatively simple system, so you have to introduce something else to make this correlation. One correlation we can introduce to make this interesting quasi-particle correlation that I'm going to discuss is introduce the superconductor. So when we put the superconductor next to the metal and send the current through this interface between metal and superconductor, the basic principle or basic the phenomena that governing all of the system is Andrew process. Basically, the electron comes in from the metal or the quasi-particle comes from the metal, cannot get into the superconductor because, the Cooper pair is basically ground state. So you have to turn this electron into Cooper pair by grabbing another electron from the same normal metals to form the Cooper pair and create a hole. And this hole should retroreflect it from this interface such that that we can just send the current through in this system. So in this picture, basically, you can see that this electron and hole can be correlated through at the near the interface as long as they stay within this sum of the coherence length scale in this metal, that you can create this electron hole correlation in the system, right? And this has been kind of studied experimentally in various ways. For example, you can measure interface the conductance here, and throughout this Andrew process, interface conductance should be enhanced, for example. In more direct way that you can just measure this type of the thing is just to try to monitor or capture this reflected hole separately. Now, but the problem here is that electron holes is retro-reflected, the same path, so it's not easy to separate these two correlated quasi-particle. The first demonstration of the measuring this retro-reflected hole was done in the 80s in the former Soviet Union, and it was a kind of really clever experiment. This is magnetofocusing experiments. So they use a bismuth, which actually has a long mean free path, and then the lead make the contact on there. And it's all the bulk measurement, and they bias that in the bismuth there, and you injected the carriers, or inject electrons there, let's say, right? But under the magnetic field, this electron will just make the cyclotron motions. And if you just put the voltage probe onto this end of the cyclotron motions, then the voltage probe that pick up this chemical potential of the injected electron, right? This is what we call the magnetic focusing experiment. If you increase the magnetic field, well, instead of you have this cyclotron orbits in this size, you have the smaller cyclotron orbits. But if these orbits bounce back from here and hit here, then you get another signal. So this is the way that as you change the magnetic field, you will have the series of the peaks coming from the multiple cyclotron orbit settings. So this is what you call the focusing experiment. And if the carriers moved ballistically, this is what is expected. Now, what is interesting in this experiment is then they start to kind of cool the samples down. And below that TC of the lead, basically once this is turning to the superconductor, this process I described will make that this, okay, electron comes in, bounce back from this the lead, but this bounce back is through the Andrew process if the contact is good, but then it comes as a hole. So once it's a hole, it carries negative chemical potential of the electron because it's a missing electron. By the way, hole moves in the same direction as the electron because it's not valence band the hole, it's a hole-created conduction band, missing electron, so it should move in the same direction as the electron. Nevertheless, it carries negative potential, so you expect to see that this signal turn into negative. It's the case. So high temperature turning to the low temperature, used to be the second peak was peak, turning to the deep, right? So this is a way that you can separate this the incoming electron to the outgoing hole to measure this one. Now, in the graphene, recently, we can just repeat this experiment. Part of the reason is we can make now extremely good contact between the superconductor and the graphene. In this case, we use a niobium to make the good contact on graphene and do the same focusing measurement. As you see here, that in high temperature above the niobium critical temperature, we have the first focusing peak, second peaks there, but then low temperature when niobium turns into the superconductor. This peak turning, second peak especially, turning to the negative dip, showing that I can measure the unreprocessed hole. So this is good. So at least we can demonstrate we can make the good contact between niobium and graphene. But then we can ask that, can I just put this to the extreme case? that what if that I just put this into the quantum limits, and instead of this cyclotron, classical cyclotron orbit, what if that I just put into the quantum limits such that quantum Hall effect sets in, and this the path turn into the quantum Rogers state. Now, briefly, that what I expect to see here is following, right? So if I just turn everything into the quantum Hall regime and make that this whole bar where the one of the electrode is the superconductor, right? The electron will flow through the edge state and hit this superconductor and bounce back. Now let's kind of put into the skipping orbit pictures for a while. Then hole comes in, but hole again the bounce in and create the hole pairs, the hole Cooper pairs, right? And bounce back electron and keep going this. Every time this bouncing back and forth, so you will create either electron Cooper pair or hole Cooper pair, right? But if this peripheral length is long enough, at some point you don't know whether this is electron or hole quasi particle. So you will get about 50% of mixture of the electron holes. In the end of the day, in downstream, when I just measure this outgoing carriers, I get about 50% chance of the electron versus 50% chance of the hole, such that in average I get the zero chemical potentials, right? Well, so as it just kind of stands in this picture, I start to see that even if I just kind of replace one of the contact with the superconductor and create this Andreev process into the superconducting electric lead, in terms of quantum Hall measurement, I don't see any differences because same Hall potential is there, right? However, now this picture can be changed when I just make the superconductor especially narrow, right? How narrow? Well, compare with the superconducting coherence length, if the superconductor the width is narrow, there's a new possibility actually appears, right? When electron comes in, rather than it bounce back into the same side to create a hole, there's a possibility that you can grab the hole from the other side of the electrode, right? Basically, if you just look at the superconductor is thin, instead of I grab the hole electron from this side, I can grab the electron from the other side, create a hole onto the other side, and of course that hole is moving into the same direction of the electron, it's a downstream missing electron, right, carrying the negative potentials. In this particular case, that if this thing is happening, what I expect to see here is basically that electron hole pair can be correlated across in this system, right? Of course, then you may worry about, well, how about the hole conductivity, but turns out this Andreev process will double the current, so you will get the still same hole voltages, also, same hole conductivities. But nevertheless, the important sign here is if you monitor chemical potential of the downstream of this the quantum energy state, you will get the negative signals. And this is a rather experimentally surprising fact if you just observe this one, because in this circuit, I basically applied everything from the zero to V is my bias. But somewhere in my circuit, I start to pick up the negative voltage that outside of my power supplies, right? So it's a rather kind of intriguing situation if we just think about classical wave. Now, experimentally, we actually exactly did this experiment. So we built up this graphene device where the one of the electrodes is a thin niobium nitride. And when we measure these downstream potentials and convert in terms of the resistance by normalizing by current, you see that whenever we have the quantum Hall effect sets in, then we get the negative signals. And this negative signals quickly decays away when I just make the superconducting electrode thicker and thicker, showing that I can even measure what is the superconducting coherence length inside of my this niobium electrode, niobium nitride electrode in this case, right? So it did all kind of show that we can make the correlations between the electron and hole across this quantum energy state. So this is quite neat. You may say that, okay, so this is a neat demonstration that indeed make these correlations and we can proximitized the quantum energy states, which actually is cool, but what is beyond that? We can actually spin around these pictures in the modern languages. So in modern language, I can just kind of challenge in the following way, right? So okay, so here is the quantum energy states that across surrounding this the superconducting electrode. If we just make the trench onto the graphene, which actually we did in that way, but then this the quantum energy states is now that the connected through the thin superconductors, right? So basically, this is a basic ingredient. You have the counter-propagating edge states, which actually couple with the superconductors, and that's basically the basic ingredient. You can create the Majorana fermions, non-abelian fermions, quasi-particles there. Indeed, one picture that you can present is seeing this cross-Andreev process is basically the transport through the Majorana fermions that sets in into the system. So indeed, this is not our idea, that my idea, or it was actually projected with the group of the theorists. Indeed, not only integer quantum hole, if you just kind of do this experiment with the fractional quantum hole, there's a possibility that, that you can create this localized non-abelian fermions at the end of the superconducting electrode. So we're actually pushing this idea a bit further. This is a very preliminary, so not much of the quantitative result, but we start to now create this kind of the resonance states with the fingers and create these Josephson junctions and see that the Josephson supercurrent here is clearly tied with the superconducting edge states we are making here. So this is another exciting field that we can create the electron hole correlation. I think that I have only 2 minutes and I have one more subject I cannot cover, but I will give you just a quick update on that side. Another thing that you can make the interesting correlation is, of course, across the Landau levels and extreme strong quantum condition where you can quench all the kinetic energy and interaction actually plays a role. André Young here in this campus actually recently showed that graphene can house that all these even denominator fractions in the rather strongly. So that's kind of another example. One way that you can just do that is also you can create the magnetoexistence across these two separated graphene systems. So this idea has been around in the quantum hole bilayer, and Jim Eisenstein actually did series of the beautiful experiments in the past 10 years that clearly show that one can create the electron hole pairs across these two separate Landau level in bilayer. And once you do that, this the exciton or magnetoexciton you can create can condense down into macroscopic quantum state like the Bose-Einstein condensation. And that result there is basically two layers that strongly couple such that you can start to see that the quantized drag hole effects and perfect dragging and so on. Recently, we can create a very similar thing in the graphene. The difference in between the graphene, the magnetoexciton condensation with gallium arsenide is you can just make this one with various different type of the Landau level, not only its lowest Landau level, and not only that, you can also correlate between electron and hole Landau level, creating that basically you can make this quantum hole insulator, the exciton insulators, where that you can create this this system without edge states, and that's kind of quite exciting, and that's kind of recent result. And large tunability that we have, it seems like that we can create these condensations actually go crossover between the Bose-Einstein type BC type to the BCS by simply controlling the magnetic field in wider ranges. I think that's another excitement that we can just kind of provide into the new correlation system based on the graphene. Okay, so that's it. Thank you.
More. A lot of beautiful results, so questions?
On the Wiedemann-Franz violation,
yes.
So the value of the enhancement of the Lorentz number by, say, 20 or something,
yes.
That should be something that depends on the geometry. Is there a way to do similar to what has been done in other hydrodynamics measurements to change the geometry and try to see whether you are indeed in that right regime?
Right, so that's a good point, a good question. Now, the hydrodynamic that we reach here is kind of different hydrodynamic regimes than other experiments, because in other experiments, say, for example, Manchester's beautiful experiments, they are strictly focused on the Fermi liquid regime, in other words, high density regimes, right? So there, that the way that you can check that is length scale variations out there. Now, in our case, length is very important, but we have a bit of the delicate the limits that we cannot change the length too much. The part of the reason is the experimental, the method we are using rely on that we want to put the electron is more like the diffusive transport, because to measure thermal transport, what we measured, we want to measure thermal transport in the channel, right? But then if the electrons start moved ballistically, all the heat is... Right. So right, it's coming there. Right. So we can just reduce the width, and such that now you can reduce the mean prepath, and that's what you are just kind of mentioning. Yes, we haven't done that, but that's a good suggestion. There's a technical reason why it's difficult to do that, by the way, because we need the channel resistances close, not too high, such that we can measure noise at high frequencies. But in principle, that can be done. But we don't do that. Yeah.
I mean, at present, the mean free path is much smaller than the width. So
you're still not in that regime.
Not in the sense of the geometry yet.
Yeah. Okay. But we can reduce the mean free path even further by just doing that. That's what you're saying. Right. Yeah. Okay.
No, thanks for the very interesting talk. Just a quick question so I understand this Cross-Andreev reflection a bit better. So obviously one of the key parts that you need for seeing the negative voltage is that you actually ground the superconducting electrode, right?
That's right.
So basically you need another path for the electrons to go out in some sense. So in what way would this change if you simply would put a grounded electrode there? Right, because then at least the zero voltage is something that maybe, depending on the transmission between your graphene and the electrode, is something that could appear, right?
Let's see. Are you asking that whether I just change the superconductor with the normal metal?
Yeah, just put copper there, and then
Then what happens is, okay, so then note that it's grounded, but there is current actually going there. In fact, actually, most of the current is drained through this ground.
That's
right?
That's what you need, right?
And then what we just do that, then you get the non-negative voltage if it's normal matter. In fact, what happens is this voltage is slightly above the zero. The part of the reason is if the contact is not perfectly absorb everything, right? Then there's the small positive voltage actually can appear there. So in fact, to get the true non-negative components, you have to also subtract that components. That can be done by just comparing this the superconductor with the normal state versus superconducting state. You can even get that information. But to make sure that there is no artifacts such as kind of finite contact resistance and not perfect efficiency, we actually replace this with just the same metal, say in gold, and just observe that, and then we just see that complete different behavior.
But what do you see then? Small voltage, same voltage?
Here?
Yes.
It's positive voltage. Positive small voltage.
Positive small. Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
You flashed almost virtually a experiment with flux quantization.
Yes. Yeah.
Can you see that a little?
Experimental. You mean the? Okay.
Yeah, there.
Oh, no. This is only to the friends. That's why I was gazing there, but I want to kind of argue something. But okay, so this is a really preliminary.
What's the geometry here?
So this is basically two fingers facing each other. So previous claim that I made is, well, you can create a Majorana there, right? So one way you can just really prove this, whether there is Majorana is okay, so whether at least there is a zero bias anomalies there, zero bias peaks there. But even better one is where there's you can do the phase things.
Part of flux quantum.
Yes. So then you want to make this Josephson junction, somehow this can do that. This is a very first step, first of all, that can we make the Josephson junction by just putting this together. So we get the Josephson junctions, and whether this Josephson junction is anything with the quantum Hall states, which is an ingredient of the creating the Majorana. So we start to see that this Josephson junction with the critical currents with modulated with this the quantum Hall state sets in. So we know that quantum Hall state to do something, but is this really Majorana or the flux quantization? That we don't have data.
So far, it's hard to tell whether it's. What is the flux quantum?
Correct. Yeah, so you see that this is a completely preliminary, yes. But I'm just showing that we are moving there.
Philip, very impressive thermal transport data.
Yeah.
So one short question. You can measure kappa xy too and look at quantization of thermal Hall effect?
So that's a very good point. For now, we don't. This is basically, you can just think about it's a two-terminal thermal conductance. Right. So even magnetic field, this is basically kappa xx squared plus kappa xy squared square root. Now, in principle, you can make these thermometers in the side way and design in that way, aim for this measuring the kappa xy. But that's more involved. We are just moving in that direction. But this measurement per se, it is not the kappa xy.
So another question about violation of the Wittmann-Franz law.
Yeah.
Of course, it's very convincing and very, very important. But in compensated semiconductors, you have what is called bipolar thermal transport.
Yes.
And it gives something in excess of the Wittmann-Franz law. But to my knowledge, it gives a very small correction. So, but do you have, idea of how much that could
That's a very good point. You may be referee number two. No, paper. No, I just, okay. Yeah, that's certainly important consideration one has to make. As you said, the incompensated semiconductors, the bipolar diffusions can create also the violation, apparent violation of Wiedemann-Franz law at the near this the band gaps. And part of the reason I can see that is basically that it's uncompensated thermoelectricity, so it just drive this additional current, added up electron component, the whole components added up. Graphene basically was computed, and then violation can be up to the factor of 3 or 4, and that depends on the careful material parameter. We have much more than that, the first one. And second one is, according to this bipolar diffusion effects, you expect to see that this violation keep growing with this temperature. If that is origin, that basically as you increase temperature, your thermoelectricity increases, so violation increases more, right? Now, what you're seeing here is basically we increases here, but then drops. And that's kind of important point that according to the, our hydrodynamic pictures, basically once the electron and phonon inelastic scattering sets in, we just kind of break down these pictures, and that's basically where it appears, which cannot be explained again the bipolar diffusion effect. Yeah. So it's quantitatively and qualitatively, we don't believe that's important.
More questions?
Okay, well, thank you very much for that.
Thank you.